I mean, listen, we're talking about practice.
Playoffs? What are we talking about? Playoffs?
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is KETR's Locker Room, your sports podcast for Northeast Texas. Each week, we look at the biggest headlines in sports and highlight local sports stories. Here's your hosts.
All right, we are here on this Wednesday, October 2nd. Cooper Welch, Jordan Davis, and Taylor Phelps here. October really snuck up on me, guys. We are very privileged to have Miss Judy Sackfield in here in the show today. She's going to talk to us about the academic side of the athletic department. We're also going to talk the very disappointing game.
I told you.
163 for the Rangers.
I told you.
Finish off the show talking about DeLoss Dodds, the UT athletic director, retiring at the end of this academic year. So first, let's talk to Mrs. Sackfield. Let's talk the academic side of the sporting world. First, just tell us what you do in the athletic department.
Well, first of all, good morning. And, you know, in the athletic department, I wear a lot of hats. Okay. But primarily, the main hat I wear is the academic one. And my job is to oversee the student athletes, just to be sure that they are doing everything they need to do to progress towards their degree, number one. And then number two is to make sure that they are eligible for competition through NCAA rules and all of that. Right. So that's primarily what I do.
And that's a rule book that is like how big?
Pretty thick. And right. And I have a good compliance director that just puts me in my place when I don't know the rule. But yeah, we have to follow a lot of rules, and I have to make sure the student athletes know them, and they're hard to follow. But
okay, are there any rules that you think are weird or that are just out of the box that you don't use very often?
People may not know or even think of.
It's hard because I think of everything I do, but I have been from a counselor to a, I tell kids life stories. Mm-hmm. That happens quite a bit. Just because I've been there, done that, and I don't want them to fall into the path that I fell into when I first came out of college.
Right.
I think of myself as a bit of a character, but the characters I deal with are the characters, and I'm really not the, I'm just the supporting cast to them. But I'm there kind of for them all times. I think mm-hmm. one thing people don't realize is that we work well into the night. So many times, you'll see my car out there, but I'm usually in there either working with athletes or study halls, or I'm just trying to get caught up. So we're there pretty late.
Right.
What made you interested in working with student athletes?
You know, it's a great question. And when I speak to recruits when they come to campus, I'm pretty sincere about this. When I started college, I came from Canada, went to the United States, didn't know really what I wanted to do. I think my parents were just happy that I finally decided that I was going to go to college because I really did not want to. Mm-hmm. My destiny was to be on the national team for Canada. And when I made a commitment to go to Clemson University, I got there and loved my experience. I'm not going to say I didn't, but I wasn't prepared. And I got there, and my grades were horrible. I didn't know what I was doing. I went to class every day, but I really felt like class was in the way of getting me to practice every day, because mm-hmm. my whole focus was just sports. And I think that's the general norm that people think about athletes. But the light bulb went off one time, and I just said, what am I doing? I mean, this is crazy. And I finally figured out what I wanted to do. So what led me into that was I actually got into coaching initially, thinking I could help young people that way. And then I thought, man, there's just more out there. And I don't want I'd never wanted it to happen to student athletes that happened to me, which was I didn't know where I was going. I had no direction. I didn't know the job I was going to get. And I really wanted to be able to help young people figure that out.
All right. Well, you also were the interim athletic director while between Carlton Cooper and Ryan Ivey. Can you tell us a little bit about that side, like being an interim director?
Yeah, that experience, thank God for Ryan Ivey. That's all I'm going to say, because that experience was one of many that I've had, but that probably was one of the hardest. I have to give credit to the three guys that worked in the office with me, Sammy Marone and Michael Hill, because without them, I couldn't have been even able to do it. You know, the president told me, you know, build morale. He said, make sure things are done on time. And I think I did okay with that. Mm-hmm. My job was not to be the athletic director. It was seriously to keep everybody intact. We were in a little bit of a shambles, I think, when it all happened, and my job was to bring that unity back, and I felt like I did an okay job with that, and then of course Ryan's taking it now to a new level, so I never wanted to be the AD. I said that from the beginning, but I was really it was a great opportunity for me to sit in that chair, to be able to have some of those conversations with people that I need to have, and for my career advancement as well.
Right. No, Duty, you've been an athlete. We talked about, you know, coming from Canada, playing volleyball at Clemson. Mm-hmm. You've been a coach, mm-hmm. obviously. You've been an SWA, mm-hmm. You know, in administration and athletics. What else? What next step is there? What is your other career goals?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because when I fall in love with something, I tend to stay, and I stay for a long time. But, you know, when I got into coaching, I always said I did it the wrong way. I tell young people all the time that when you get into coaching, you should be a graduate student. You should go up those ranks. And here I am leaving Clemson, and all of a sudden, I'm a head coach at Georgia Tech. And that was pretty scary, and I was terrible. I mean, I was a terrible coach. And so for career advancement, I thought, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do. I was an athlete. I'm supposed to be a coach. And really, I didn't want to coach. I wanted to coach in a different capacity, in a life type of coaching. And so I think that I got into the academic world, and my parents would probably say why, because I absolutely hated school. But I think it's because I think there's more to it than just yes. studying. I think there's a whole concept that we forget in that life skill part of it. So moving forward, to answer your question and giving you kind of the lengthy answer, is that, you know, I do have aspirations maybe to be an athletic director, but I definitely want to be a senior woman administrator on in a department that oversees academics and oversees possibly the compliance area, possibly internal operations. That's really a career goal for me. And I think once you get to that phase, then you can start thinking about being an athletic director. There's no way I'm ready for that right now. I am learning a great deal from my athletic director currently. Mm-hmm. But I think I have aspirations for that. I just want to continue learning.
Hello, Ms. Junie. I know that a lot of people don't see behind the scenes mm-hmm. of what y'all actually do. But can you tell people like how hard really your job is? Because some people may think, oh, she's easy. All she do is talk to athletes, try to help them get on track. But athletes can be difficult at times.
And the amount of hours that it takes yes. to spend with every team.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I never think of it, I'll be honest with you. And I think that if I did, I'd probably go, what am I doing in this field? I think it's the fact is people have this vision that working with athletes is like the cool job. Mm. My sister thinks that. I mean, she thinks it's the cool job. Right. And I think a lot of people think it's the cool job. And it is. It's exciting. It's fun. You get a new group of kids every year that just are wide-eyed and, you know, this is a new world for them. And you get to go to games and you really sit on the front row of everything. And that's a lot of fun. The hard work in it is that I think athletes have a lot of baggage. They have a lot of things that they're doing that people forget. Yeah. And they need people in my area to be able to help them put that time management together. You know, when a student athlete is, people will say, yeah, it's like working, but it's not necessarily like working. It is a job, and they have a job, and they work at it year-round, but they also get very injured, and they have to go to doctor's appointments constantly, and they're always training, and they're always sore, and they don't want to study because of all of those things. Yeah. And then my job is to get in there and say, well, we got to get it done. I spend a lot of hours just worrying about them. And I think that that's things that people forget that happens. And I think any time you put student athletes in your hands, you have a responsibility. And I worry about them constantly. But I also know that I spend a lot of time just trying to get them on track. People don't know that, I think.
Yeah, they overlooked it.
Well, when we were talking before the show started, you also wanted to talk about your academic committee that's the student sides that helps you out a little bit. So tell us about them.
Yeah, you know what? I am incredibly proud of our student athlete advisory committee. Taylor happens to be on there. He's our treasurer and really heads up our community service. I have Chantry McMahon on our golf team, who's our president, and Holly Jenkins is the vice president. And then we have Sierra Holmes on our volleyball team, who is our secretary. But it's a mixture of student athletes from every team. We have pretty much two representatives on every team, and some of the larger teams have more. They meet twice a month as a group, but they have been doing some fabulous things. And I don't like necessarily like talking about myself, but I love talking about the student athletes. And honestly, I am telling you, this group is out there doing things that you don't even know they're doing. Every Wednesday, they are committed to go to our elementary schools in town and work in the tutoring program over there. Mm-hmm. They are doing now a pen pal program. They do a mentoring program with them. All of our students are going to be taking, student athletes are going to be taking part in the pen pal program. We've been out cleaning up the roads. We've been, we were hosts for the Kyle Maynard event, where we actually were giving out the programs and seating people. Anything that we can do leadership-wise, anything we can do community service-wise, is a very community service-driven group. And just to say that they do have an annual dodgeball tournament coming up on November 19th, and hopefully we will have a KETR group out there, because that's really their philanthropy, is Make-A-Wish, and they're trying to raise a lot of money for that. So I'm very proud of them. They've done a great job, and they deserve a little pat on the back.
All right.
Well, you know, away from SAC, and I'm in that organization, and Judy spoke well. We have done a lot, but I just want to ask you about the international student athlete side, really. And, you know, there's not a lot of people that have experience in that, because, I mean, you look at our campus, we probably only have a few women's soccer players that I can think of, maybe, and that's really it. But, you know, when you come here, do you ever think, you know, I may never be back in my home country, because you haven't lived back there since you came to Clemson?
No, I left, I went to Clemson, and then I was the head volleyball coach at Georgia Tech, and then I went over to UAB and moved through the ranks in there, and then was an associate athletic director there for academics. International is tough, and I will say that. I think it's a wonderful experience, and I think if a student athlete in another country has an opportunity to come and experience what other countries have, you can't take that experience away. I think it's unbelievable, and I would recommend it to anybody. However, I think the hard part is when you get into another country and you're here for 4 years, and, you know, especially as an athlete, you're developing friendships and all your connections are in the United States. Sometimes it's very difficult to go back and say, okay, what do I want to do? And especially the career field I chose, it's a little different up there. And so it was a very tough transition. Family, I miss a lot of things. You know, I miss a whole lot with my family. But I made a commitment, and they understand that. They always get some nice trips. They come down and visit, and it's great. But I think it is tough on international, especially international student athletes, because they're not like the international student that has, you know, they kind of get together and have fun and do some things together as a group. And really and truly, our international student athlete is with the team, and they still have that fun. But sometimes they don't have that person to really talk about what am I going to do when I go back home? Like, what is it? How am I going to get there? And what job do I have when I go back there? So, you know, that's part of my transition with them as well. So a great experience.
All right. Well, we got to cut this segment short, because both Judy and Taylor have a meeting to go to in about a minute. So we'll be back, and we'll talk. Me and Jordan will talk the Rangers and everything else that's going on. Anyway, this is KETR's Locker Room. We'll be right back.
Do you want to hear the sounds of your favorite Texas artists? There's only one guy who can tickle your fancy. Mr. Matt Minky. He's so ready for you to turn him on.
Don't turn me off. Turn me on.
So if you don't have anything on, turn Matt on. He'll be all over it like a kilt on an Irishman.
Kilts are unbelievably comfortable to wear.
Weekdays from noon to 3, 88.9 KETR.
Listeners of KETR love to play outside, whether it's sailing, tennis, running, or a round of golf. You can remind them of what you have to offer through program underwriting on your station. For more information about underwriting on KETR, contact Sherry Gardner at 903-513-9684.
All right, we're back here on KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch and Jordan Davis, as I said earlier, Taylor Phelps and Ms. Sackfield had to leave. They had to go to a meeting. But we're more than happy to stay here and entertain you the rest of the show. All right, Jordan. Let's take a deep breath.
Let's talk about it.
Let's mourn a little bit.
All of Texas is mourning.
All of Texas is mourning.
Well, except for Houston. Yeah.
The Texas Rangers are...
God.
Are done.
The biggest collapse I've ever seen a team have in quite some time.
Would you really say this season, though? Because I would have said last season was a much bigger collapse. I mean, they went from last season 6 games up on the A's with 6 games left to not making the playoffs. Well, they made the wild card.
Yeah, they made the wild card, but I don't – a lot of people – it's going to be a lot of changes with the Rangers.
I agree.
This season they was so high. And if you think about it, the Rangers had every chance to win, to be in a better position. Mm-hmm. To be honest, the Rangers should be playing the Tigers right now in the ALDS. They shouldn't even been in a wild card situation.
Nope, not at all.
Let alone a wild card game with the Rays. They shouldn't even been nowhere with the Rays. They had the lead over the A's.
Mm-hmm.
Down the stretch, like, the Rangers had everything they wanted. They can't get mad at nobody but themselves.
Yeah.
They was doing it without Cruz. Mm-hmm. They was doing it with pitching, with home runs. But I don't know, Cooper. It just seems like every time it gets close to the playoffs, they let off the gas and they just cruise into the playoffs and let a hot team always beat them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we see this with a lot of Dallas teams now.
Yes.
We've seen the Dallas Cowboys always screw up the past, what, 4 or 5 years
lost
on the last
the Chargers
3 games. Yeah.
Last week. They shouldn't have lost to the Chargers.
And they always get to, the 3 or 4 weeks before the playoffs. They could make it. We're like, okay. And then they lose 3 of the 4, or they lose all 4, or they lose even just 2, but that still kicks them out of the playoffs.
I just don't understand.
Yeah, and then the Mavericks, this last season, they blew up the team completely, and Dirk was just...
I feel bad for Dirk.
Yeah.
But with the Rangers, I honestly thought out of all the Texas teams, the Rangers were the strongest.
Yeah.
Well, next to the Spurs. But the Rangers, because Yu Darvish had such a hard start.
Yeah.
With Yu Darvish, I think that he peaked too early. If they would have had him pitching like that later on in the season instead of early on in the season, mm-hmm. we could be sitting here talking about the Tigers and the Rangers, who's going the best matchups. But – you, like I said, you have to have more than one person that leads your team, and the Rangers didn't have that. They just had Yu Darvish, and he's just a pitcher. But Ron Washington did everything he can. It's not his fault.
Not at all.
I mean, he did everything he can. He got them into position to be where they wanted to be. This simply falls on the players.
Yeah.
This was a total player fault. Like, in the past, you could have said, okay, well, our manager isn't that good or management isn't that good. But management did all the things necessary this season. They went and got another pitcher to help Yu Darvish. He didn't do nothing.
Nope.
They went and got – the best thing that happened to the Rangers was Rios coming. When he came, they went, like, on a spurt. Like, they was, like, hot. And then they just cooled off. You let Oakland come back. Oakland was not even supposed to come back. They were supposed to be in that playoff game yesterday. They were scared for their lives. It was like 9-12 games left, and they was down 4.5-5 games. It was like, okay, it's over with. The Rangers going to win. They're going to go this far. But now we're sitting here. What could have been?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I think, and this is just me, but I think that it was a mistake to get the Rangers hitting coach that we have now. We went from the guy that we had – last year going into the playoffs, and the Rangers died on him. Yeah, I get that. it's time for him to go.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't have picked up the Red Sox, Dave Madigan, because the Red Sox were terrible last year. They were last place.
We learned to listen.
Yeah.
We let him go for a reason.
Yeah.
And when Rangers picked him up, I was like, okay, do he know somebody that works in the Rangers management? Because from what I saw, our players last year couldn't hit a single.
Yeah.
We was lucky to hit a double. Don't even talk about home runs. We didn't hit none last year.
Yeah.
So for them to make a move like that, I believe that the people that you put in your staff affects your team tremendously.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you don't have winning people around you, it's going to be hard to win or stay consistent because they're not used to winning or they just there for the money. And I'm not saying he's not there for the, you know, there for the money or he's just there to win, but apparently he's not a good enough coach. If every team he goes to, their offense goes down from the year prior. So it was a terrible hire. It's going to be a well-expected fire. But, I mean, what do you think the Rangers are going to do now that they're out of the playoffs? They had the collapse. You know SportsCenter's going to talk about them until the World Series. It's been one of the biggest collapses in sports history. What do Rangers fans what are they to think right now?
Right. You know, I think there's a very good chance that the Rangers are going to sit still and do absolutely nothing, the same way they did in this last post.
Is that smart, though?
It's not smart, not at all. But we saw them strike out with trying to get all the different pieces that they wanted, keeping Josh Hamilton, getting what's his name? The guy that's pitching for the Dodgers now, Greinke.
Oh, yeah, Greinke.
You saw him strike out with all these big-name free agents. We made a good acquisition with signing Profar, drafting him. But I don't know. I was really disappointed in last year's offseason, and I think this year, if they all want to keep their jobs and if they all want the Rangers to do well, do better next season, something's got to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Do you think Beltrez will get traded?
I think Beltrez here until he retires.
Wow.
I think the most likeliest trade scenario, and this is shouting back to Kevin Jeffries, who is the operations manager here. We talked a lot on the way to one of the Friday football games about, you know, who's the best trade piece that the Rangers have. And he said Ian Kinsler. It's not even close that it should be Ian Kinsler.
Yeah.
He should be traded because he's got a big contract, and he's a leader of the team, yes, but he's you know, he could do something for another team and we could get a lot for him. And I agree. I think he's the best trade piece we have besides Elvis Andrews, who we're not going to get rid of
because
he's awesome.
Yeah.
We have him signed to a long-term deal, all these things.
He's staying put.
So I think the two biggest trade pieces we have are Jurickson Profar or Ian Kinsler. And I don't think we're going to get rid of Profar because we just got him.
Yeah.
So I think Kinsler is the guy that gets traded.
So say if they do trade Kinsler,
mm-hmm.
What, as a Rangers fan, who would you like for them to trade for? Would you like them to trade for a pitcher? Would you like for them to trade for another bat, maybe another some more speed? Because it seems like the Rangers' main issue is pitching and hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, they're solid in. Defense, they're solid. I always see them on SportsCenter making some top 10 play on defense. But it just seems like other than you, Darvish, they don't have a pitcher they can rely on because Matt Garza, apparently, I don't think, honestly, he's going to stay long because I feel like, you know, the manager will be like, okay, we gave him a chance. He really didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
And none of the starts he had, he didn't give out performance like they thought he was. But there's some pitchers out there in the market from the NL. Do you see them reaching to the NL to get some pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, they did with Matt Garza. They reached over to the NL and got him.
Yeah.
But if they're going to make a trade, I honestly would rather see them go for Giancarlo Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing.
He needs to get out of Miami, too.
Yeah. He's wasting his talents in Miami.
Yes.
He needs to take his talents away from South Beach.
Yes, he does.
Because
apparently it's not working for him.
Yeah.
That I feel so bad for them.
I feel bad for anybody that's a Miami Marlin.
Yes.
Or
a Houston Astro.
Yeah, Houston Astro or, you know.
Or a Chicago Cub. They have the worst.
Yeah, or even a Toronto Blue Jay.
I thought the Blue Jays seriously was going to do something this year.
Yeah.
Picking Jose Reyes, I was like, okay, that's a team to watch out for. They already hit a lot of home runs. Now they add him, but I was just disappointed in them.
Oh, they had a terrible season. I mean, they came this close to almost taking the Rays out for us.
So yes.
We would have made the wild card, but they couldn't even do that for us.
God. And then why the Rangers didn't pitch? Did they pitch you Darvish in the game yesterday?
No, they couldn't because he pitched in the game. He pitched Sunday to win that last game against the Angels. And so they had
to use... They needed to use him then.
Yeah, so they had to use Martin Perez Monday night, which is... he did well. I mean,
he only allowed
3 runs, and then he left. And then it kind of all just fell apart. We were counting on the bullpen, and they allowed, I think, 2 or 3 more runs. No, it was 2 more runs, so it was 5-2 at the end. But I still think it all goes back to the batting.
Yeah.
I think the bats needed
to
work.
Too inconsistent this season.
Yeah.
At least last season, the Rangers had a more consistent offense. This year, it's just...
It was up and down.
Mm-hmm. A couple games, you'd be like, wow. They was hitting, like, scoring 15, 16 runs.
Yeah.
Beating everybody down. And then come back, 1 run, 2 run, 3.
0 runs.
Yeah. It's like, what is going on? Like, as a Rangers fan... How did it feel to sit there and watch them crumble?
You know, I wouldn't have said this at the time, but I think I'm actually glad that I had Dish because I couldn't see him. The only games I could see him were Friday nights, and Friday nights I'm doing football stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that was a blessing in disguise. At the time, I hated it, and I still want to get, you know, a bigger package or switch providers or something and be able to watch the Rangers. But I think at the time it was... Now that I'm looking back on it, it's really nice because I didn't have to watch them.
Because it was horrible. I watched them a couple games. I watched them struggle against teams like Seattle.
Yeah.
Out of all the teams.
They always struggle
with
Seattle.
I don't understand how a team like the Rangers could struggle with a team like the Mariners. It just don't make sense. Like, you expect them to struggle with the Yankees, but they beat the Yankees every year, tear them up.
Mm-hmm.
You expect them to struggle against the Orioles. They beat the Orioles, tear them up. The two teams the Rangers just cannot beat for nothing is the A's and, sadly, the Mariners. Mm-hmm. They struggle the most against them two teams. Why do you think that?
You know, I think sometimes people just have your number or players want to play better against you. Like Justin Smoak, who we traded for Cliff Lee to Seattle, you know, he always has – ridiculous games against us. He'll get that one single where you're not expecting it, or that that home run that just makes you go and then, you know, the A's are just a good team. You're gonna struggle against them no matter what. But I think there's always that one terrible team that every other team that struggles with. Like,
I understand.
Like the A's, they struggle with the Astros. They won the series, but they didn't win as many as they should have. Let's go to the basketball. The Spurs struggle a lot with the Milwaukee Bucks. Doesn't make sense.
You know, a lot of teams struggle with the Bucks. For some odd reason, the Milwaukee Bucks are just one team that just can't get victories, but don't nobody like playing them.
No,
that's
nobody
just
does.
Nobody likes going to Milwaukee and playing them, and don't nobody want them to come to their place and play them because it's just that team you just don't like.
Yeah.
I just don't understand that. I never did. I don't like the Bucks. I never did, but I hate playing against them. I just always hated playing against the Bucks because there's that one team that can win, that can, like, beat you, and then you sit there and, how are we losing against them?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, as Texas teams, well, it's so depressing to talk about Texas teams. How about the Pirates?
Yeah, the Pirates are.
The Pirates won a playoff game the first
time
since 1992.
21 years, almost as long as I've been alive.
I've been alive 22 years.
Yeah, me too.
It took them almost 22 years to win a playoff game. Mm-hmm. How far do you think the Pirates can go?
You know, who are they playing in the ALDS? Or
they play the
NLDS?
Cardinals.
They're playing the Cardinals?
I think they have a good chance.
They have a over 500 record against the Cardinals, so I think they can win. I think they could honestly represent the NL side of the World Series. I don't know if they're going to win the World Series.
I don't know either, but I think them and the Dodgers can make the championship, and that'll be a great series.
Mm-hmm.
But that game yesterday, I watched the game on TBS, and that game, I have never seen Pittsburgh Pirate fans that excited about baseball since Roberto Clemente.
Yeah.
And that's a long – we weren't even alive when he was alive. So that shows you how long. But to see a franchise struggle for so long – and then finally win, that was it was good to see. And like, I hope that Cinderella story don't end for them.
Yeah, I do too.
Because the Pirates have been struggling for a long, long time. They're like the Detroit Lions of baseball.
Yeah.
They're pretty bad in the past. And actually see them win. What do you think their strengths are?
You know, they've got strengths everywhere. They've got great pitching. I can't name any of their pitchers except for a guy who used to be on the Yankees.
Yeah.
Now I can't name him. but they also have great hitting in A.J. McCutchen, some other really good pieces they brought in. And they kind of went a little bit Moneyball here because, you know, they don't have that big of a contract total.
I think their biggest star is Justin Minot. And they got him from Minnesota, and he just came.
Yeah, he just got traded to them. So, but they're good everywhere. They're good on defense. They're good at running the bases. They're good at hitting. And they're really deep pitching. They've got a great pitching staff. Now, I don't know about their bullpen. That may be a weakness. But their starting pitching is great. So I honestly could see them at least competing for the World Series, if not winning. You know, I think for me, my personal take for this World Series is going to be Detroit versus Pittsburgh. I think that's what it's going to be. But let's do some more comparisons. I think the Pittsburgh Pirates being in the playoffs now would be like the Cleveland Browns.
Oh God,
making the Super Bowl.
Not even Cleveland Browns making the Super Bowl. Let's go a step further than that. It's like the Jaguars.
The Jacksonville Jaguars?
Making the Super Bowl.
Right now.
Right now. Because you think about it, the Pirates just lost like almost 100 games last year. Mm-hmm. They had another losing season. It was just going downhill. Pittsburgh has two teams to root for, and that's the Steelers.
And the Penguins.
And the Penguins. Yeah. Whenever they're not playing, the Pirates has always just been somebody to fill time.
Yeah.
But this is the first year that the Pirates are getting more you know, news than the Steelers because my Steelers are 0-4. We can't win a game for nothing. We can't protect a quarterback. So it's like that's a nightmare. The Penguins, Crosby's been hurt. He's been in and out the hospital, broken this, broken that. It's like, okay, our dream child is hurting. Let's not root for them.
Right.
And other than that, unless you root for the Patriots, I mean – Pittsburgh really don't have nobody to root for. So with the Pirates just coming out the woodworks and finally winning a game and looking like a professional team, I feel good for the city because that game was packed. I haven't seen PNC Park packed like that since the All-Star game.
Yeah.
And that's sad. But, wow, like, sports is amazing in general. Sports is amazing. Like, you never know what team can just be the best team. All the good teams are starting to, and all sports, all the good teams are starting to take a little decline now, and all the teams that used to be in the bottom half are slowly moving up to the top half, such as the Monday night game with the Dolphins and the Saints. Both teams last year was 2-2, 0-4. Now you got one team 3-1, one team 4-0. It's crazy how teams change. And you, as you grow up, you look at sports, you be like, oh, man, that team will always be sorry. That team will never get no talent. And then, boom, a manager switch or a coach switch, and then they're right back up there with the big names, and you looking like, where did they come from? They was just this last year. And it's amazing how competitive sports have gotten today. Because I'm honestly scared for some of my teams because the Bengals look for real. The Browns won two in a row. Then won two games out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about them. The only team I feel comfortable we can just beat up on is the Giants because they're 0-4-2.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's move on and do the final topic of the day. To Lost Dodds.
Wow.
Who has been
32 years.
Yeah, really long time at UT.
Wow.
He is retiring at the end of the 2013-2014 school year. He's officially done. In August 2014.
Do you think the Mac Brown situation had anything to do with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think the Mac Brown situation, the Rick Barnes situation, the UT basketball.
Oh, God.
The Augie Garrado, how do we say his last name? The baseball coach, him not making the Big 12 tournament in baseball last year. I think all three of those things, you know, spelled his demise. And he's also just old.
Yeah,
you know, it's just time to move on. But the question I want to ask you, Jordan, is who's next? Who's going to get that job?
Well, Texas is like one of those dream jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I reckon Texas will probably try to get somebody that's nationally known.
Right.
athletic director is such a hard spot, and you got so many people that's probably filling out applications, trying to be. You know, there's honestly no telling, Cooper. Honestly no telling. UT looks like a school that they want to, like, get somebody big, but they also want to get somebody where they can change the program and not just be there for publicity, but to actually be a Longhorn and support it. So I feel like this process is going to be a while before we hear about the next AD, because they're going through a time period where their athletics is struggling in all sports, and we're not used to seeing that. So whoever comes in as a new athletic director, they're going to have a hard, hard job to be build Texas back up.
Yeah,
especially
for sure.
The football program. That may be one of the hardest to build up, because basketball, you know, they always been competitive. And Rick Barnes is a good coach. But football, man, after that BYU game, I think Longhorn fans was ready to just throw the towel in. 500 yards rushing against the Longhorns. And then they got Oklahoma coming up in a couple weeks. It just don't look too good for the Longhorns.
No, it doesn't.
And for the athletic director that's been there 32 years, to say, you know what, this is going to be my last. I'm honestly scared for the school, because I don't know what's going on in the athletic program. It's been rumors that they want Nick Saban as a coach. They want the Boise State coach to be their coach. There's been even talks that Lane Kiffin might come to Texas.
Oh, no.
And I hope he doesn't.
No, no, no.
But there's been talks that they've been, you know, talking to him. And, God, no, I hope they don't bring Lane Kiffin to Texas, because then Texas would definitely.
It'd get worse.
Oh, God.
It'd get way worse.
I don't know, Cooper. Well, how do you think, with the Longhorn Network and all the revenue the Longhorns have, why are they struggling?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't make sense, because they make – I think $20 million more in revenue
than
last
any other,
season.
Other team.
Yeah.
The next more than closest. Alabama.
More than Ohio State.
Yes.
Yeah.
Big name programs, historic programs. Texas is up there with everything. Money, publicity, athletes, famous alumni. I don't understand, or I don't see how this came. It kind of came under the radar, but Texas has been in the news a lot lately.
Yeah.
And where do you think the athletic program is going?
You know what? I think unless they make a move to another conference, they're not going to be as good as they could be.
So do you, if you think Texas moves to the SEC, you think they'll be competitive in that conference?
Not right away. They'll be terrible the first 4 or 5 years, but them being in the SEC would be amazing for them. The recruits they would get, the better competition they would go against every week in, week out, the more NFL eligible players that would come out of the team and across the board. The only thing that would hurt them moving from the Big 12 to the SEC is that they wouldn't be as
dominant
as competitive in basketball. The SEC, except for Kentucky, is kind of a joke when it comes to basketball.
Yeah.
So
Kentucky and Vanderbilt. That's pretty
much
it.
And Vanderbilt's
they're all right.
Tennessee used to be but
if the Longhorns could move to another conference, not the SEC, what conference could you see them moving to and being successful now?
You know, there's when all this conference realignment stuff started, there was talk that they would join the Pac-12 or that they would join the Big Ten. I don't really see them going either one. I honestly don't know what the answer is besides the SEC, because the Pac-12 is too far. I mean, we already have problems with West Virginia traveling all over the place to be in the Big 12.
Yeah.
So imagine UT going from just to go across Texas
is a trip
several hundred miles.
Yes.
To go to California to play them would be ridiculous. God, to go to New Mexico, to go to Oregon, to go to...
That'd be ridiculous, for real.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't see that. A lot of people don't realize that, like, some teams in the conference, like West Virginia, it takes a lot out of them players. They have to leave for a game a day before to get there and rest, because they're all the way up north, and I never got that. Why is West Virginia in the Big 12? That
doesn't make any sense to me.
Like, why is Iowa State in the Big 12? If you're going to put Iowa State in the Big 12, you might as well put Iowa in the Big 12. Like, some of these conferences don't really make sense. Like, Colorado going to the Pac-12. You didn't win no games in the Big 12, so what makes you think you're going to win some in the Pac-12?
Right.
Like, it's certain teams that don't fit certain conferences. Like, Nebraska in the Big 10, they don't.
Well, I don't know. I think their mentality fits fits the
okay,
Big Ten.
Well, because, you know, they play Big Ten football, but Nebraska, to me, should stay in the Big 12. Like, Nebraska, A&M, Texas, Oklahoma, those are four teams that you knew in the Big 12 was going to be up top. The Big 12 relied on them teams. It's like, okay, these four schools are going to help our conference. They're going to get our conference out there. You get A&M going to SEC, now it's like you don't hear nothing about the Big 12 no more. Oklahoma has declined. Texas is declined. And then you got other average teams that's in there. But, I mean, Oklahoma State that you picked to go to the national championship lost to West Virginia Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see that?
I did.
That was crazy.
That was crazy. I mean, honestly, I think the craziest thing about all this right now is that the most talked about Big 12 team is Baylor. Baylor football is
without Robert Griffin
is the biggest
the hottest
attraction.
Team in the Big 12, and they're undefeated, and they've been scoring. Their scoring is up there with Oregon.
Yeah,
like I saw them play, and I was like, you know what? This Saturday, I want to watch Baylor play. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I did it, but I was turning through channels, and on one of them Southwest channels, I saw a Baylor game. I was like, let me watch Baylor. That quarterback they have right now, he's probably better than Robert Griffin was in college.
Whoa.
I'm not even joking, Cooper. This kid was chunking the ball. No stepping into no throws. Mm-hmm. Chunking the ball. And he can run. He's bigger than Robert Griffin. He could take more hits. But this Baylor team, you talked about Oklahoma State winning the Big 12. Baylor can probably surprise some people.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here because Baylor hasn't played anybody yet.
Yeah, I mean, neither am I.
They played Louisiana Monroe. They played Buffalo and a
division
FCS guy. But, yeah, I mean, scoring 70 points in every single game.
That's not easy.
Yeah, it's not something to laugh about.
Yeah, so, that's scary. Mm. And other Big 12 teams need to see, okay, Baylor has an offense. Yeah. Their defense always been a little bit, you know, they're like the Saints defense. You know, they got a good offense, but it's hard to have a good offense like that and then have a good defense. But, I mean, wow. Like 70 points in 4 or 3 straight games, that's a lot of points and a lot of yards.
Yeah.
And that's scary because now I look at the Big 12, I don't see just one team that can just stay up there because it's so shaky now. You got teams beating teams that aren't supposed to be beat. And I don't know, like this super conference talk that they talk about, if they had a super conference,
Baylor wouldn't be in it.
No, it wouldn't. You'll see the Alabamas and the Georgias. But if you honestly think about it, if college football had a super conference where they had all the big name teams, would that be good for college football?
Yes and no. I think it'd be good for, in some ways, it'd be good for the big programs to say, you know, we're only going to compete against each other.
Yeah.
And the conferences, I think, would realign again. I think having a super division, maybe, and then splitting those teams into new, brand new conferences that make more sense regionally, that make more sense television rights, things like that.
Yeah,
I think that would be good across the board for all sports. And in some ways, it would be better for the schools like Baylor, like
SMU.
Yeah, teams that don't have as much money to spend on football or anything else that are losing money constantly and that could compete against each other. I mean, they'd lose notoriety, yes. They'd lose some of the better recruits. But they'd have their own division to play against each other. And then, you know, maybe if they're good enough, maybe if they have enough of an impact and they're right there on the cusp, they can move up to the super division, kind of like Division II schools moving up to Division I.
I think it would be good for college football because, honestly, and they talked about this on SportsCenter, when teams schedule teams and these bigger teams are beating these other teams like 76-0, like one Saturday, it was just a bunch of blowouts.
Oh, yeah.
And they was talking about, is it time for teams to stop scheduling cupcakes and actually start scheduling people worth competition? And I feel like it is. I mean, if you're going around telling people your program is on the rise, you have these players and blah, 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 you need to prove it every Saturday.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, that's one team I always compare to. Notre Dame is in the independent. They're independent. But they play hard teams every week. You don't never just see them play a cupcake team unless it's like a FCS they play the first game. But they even stopped doing that. They play nothing but ranked teams week in, week out. And I feel like most college programs need to go back to that. Because, of course, you can schedule FCS teams or lower D1 teams and beat up on them and make your team look great.
Yeah.
But all actuality, it kills you because when you play against somebody of equal talent or better, you get fried. You get beat. You get torn apart. Like, look at Notre Dame when they played Alabama.
Yeah.
That was the worst championship game I ever seen, mm-hmm. ever. So I believe colleges should to match up to their own talent. You know, some teams like the Georgias and like the USC's, they need to stick to playing with other big-name programs. It don't make no sense for them to play Washington State or somebody like that or that you know they're going to beat up on. Like, right. It don't make no sense for Oregon to play teams like, well, they play Tennessee. They beat an SEC team. We can't use Oregon. They beat everybody. It's not fair for a team like Louisville to play Florida International.
Right.
You know they're going to win. You know they're going to win by a lot of points. Mm-hmm. It's not right to put UNT versus Georgia. You know who's going to win. They're going to put up a lot of points. College football needs to be more competitive. The playoffs is going to help that, but you need to put teams with their competition level. Come on now. Like,
I agree.
You got to help the school out, and you got to help these players out because – these players that get their behinds kicked by 70-something points, that's going to hurt confidence. Mm-hmm. And it's like we're playing against people that's supposed to go to the NFL. Well, why not put them people in one category and put the rest of the people in another category and have it be more even? And I think it'd be better for us.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about going to do it for us on this Wednesday show. We're not going to have a Friday show because I've got to go down to Waco.
Going to Baylor Country.
Yeah, Baylor Country.
Yep.
To attend a friend of mine's wedding. So I will not be here Friday or through the weekend. So we're not going to do a show on Friday.
Yep.
And we'll be back next Wednesday to talk to another wonderful Lion administrator or athlete and do the look at the Lions. But I do want to encourage you guys to still tune in to the Big Friday Night Scoreboard program this coming Friday. The Commerce Tigers are playing the Van Alstine Panthers, who, if you listened to the KETR Game of the Week last week, you would know that Van Alstine is a very good team. They score a lot of points, put up, I think, if I remember right, 400 or 500 yards rushing, which is something Commerce struggles with, but they should be able to take Van Alstine. And then Saturday afternoon, it's at 2 p.m., Southeastern Oklahoma State hosts the A&M Commerce Lions in Durant, Oklahoma. It's not too far if you want to drive up there, maybe go to a casino or something.
Not far at all.
But if you can't make the game, you can listen to it here on 88.9 KETR. So both games are away. They're not in Commerce, but they're both games. Excuse me. That should be a lot of fun.
Did Greenville win?
Greenville did not win. Yeah. Let's have a moment of silence for Greenville.
A moment of silence for God.
Yeah.
What was the score?
You know, I don't remember, but it wasn't that close.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh.
Anyway, that's about going to do it for us today. This is KETR's Locker Room, Cooper Welch.
I'm Jordan Davis.
And we will see you next Wednesday.